Well, good evening and welcome back to the Journey Home program. I'm your host, John-Mark Brodie, here on EWTN. And once again, we have this great privilege to come together to hear a story of faith and conversion. We're joined tonight by Heidi Hess Saxton. She's a former evangelical, and she's now the senior acquisition editor with Sophia Institute Press. And Heidi, it's great to have you with us tonight to share your story.
So, Mark, it's great to be here. Thank you.
We've interacted over the years. You know, I was talking before the show that there's a similarity between the work at the Coming Home Network and what you have been doing for a long time now, working in acquisitions, because you're meeting people at a crucial place in their journey, helping them to tell their story, helping them to take the next right steps. So it's just it's a wonderful ministry that you've been in a long time.
It's such a privilege, too. You get to meet so many people who God has worked so powerfully in their lives, and just to be able to be a small part of that and helping them shape and tell their story, it's a great privilege.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you for doing it. So, and thank you for being here. So let's go back to the beginning. Tell us a little bit about your background growing up and,
Sure.
All that.
I grew up in a evangelical, non-denominational church until I was about the age of 12. I started playing organ when I was 5. We didn't have television in my house growing up, and so I had organ lessons instead.
Nice.
So when I was 12, it was deemed I was old enough to have a regular job as a church organist, and so I was mentored by this dear woman in a local Lutheran church, and that was the first time I was ever exposed to liturgy, which was completely different from the four-part harmonies that I was used to singing in the other churches that I was a part of. My parents were very faithful evangelical Christians. They had every time the church doors opened, we were there. You know, Wednesday night, Sunday morning. You know, pretty much any time the doors were open, we were there. And my mom especially was very faithful. She was always led the vacation Bible schools and the Sunday schools. She was a superintendent of the whole department for the church of all the different classes. And she just was very devout and very sincere in her faith, even though she herself had some very hard early memories. Somehow she was able to use those and turn them into something beautiful for God.
Right.
You know, on the other hand, I was also raised with the belief that Catholics are not Christians to the point where both on my mother's side and on my father's side, there had been estrangements from siblings because they had married into the Catholic faith. And so this was something that early on I got the message that you can marry a Catholic or you can go to heaven, but you can't do both because God says you must not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. And so that message was imparted to me fairly young and very strongly so that we had a Catholic deacon living next door to us. We weren't even allowed to go into their house because they had the statues and the things like that were, you know, idols that my mother was just horrified by.
Was that unique to Catholics, or did your denomination or your group think about other Christians that way as well?
Nope, just Catholics.
Just Catholics. Okay, darn Catholics.
Those darn Catholics. Yeah, but I have to say, this is something that looking back, I can see that even in that more negative example, that God was already starting to work for me, because it raised that question early on: what's so horrible about Catholics that, you know, that we aren't close to our cousins, we can't spend time with our next door neighbors who are very nice people. They were always like bringing over cookies and doing things like that. Later on, when I decided to go to Africa, I spent a year in Senegal, West Africa, as a Bible school student. And one of my greatest contributors was one of my Catholic friends from college. She gave every month towards the support. And I would struggle with that because I thought, this is a Catholic. Should I be taking missionary money from a Catholic when I'm not
Catholic
sure that
cookies, she, Catholic yeah. money? I don't know about this. You know?
But it was really, it's really interesting because those little steps, those little gestures of kindness and faithfulness, they were way more effective than any apologetics diatribe could have been. You know, it was something where God kind of was sowing the soil, tilling the soil, and just sort of getting ready for the next big thing.
That's
an
amazing reminder. Yeah, those the small things.
Yeah.
Right. We take them for granted.
You know,
little gestures, little manners, little acts of kindness.
Right? Yep. So when I've gone finished my first semester of college, and I had flunked out royally. I failed physics. I got like a D in chemistry. This was at an engineering school. I don't know what possessed me to go to an engineering school when clearly all my interests were in the language end of things. But so my parents wisely said, okay, you should take a year off, work, build up your cash resources, and decide what you want to do with your life at that point. And so I got a job at a local steakhouse, and we were living in northern New Jersey at the time. And 3 days into this job, one of the largest snowstorms on record hit that part of the country. And this was before the days of cell phones, of course.
Right.
And they had warned me when I got this job that if you're ever late or don't show up for any reason, you will not be given a second chance. That you will automatically give your job to someone else because there was too many people looking for work at that time. So I started out an hour early to get to work. And about 5 minutes after I left, they called and said, we're closing down the restaurant. Tell Heidi not to come. But it was too late. I was there. I'd already left and there was no way to reach me. So I got all the way there and they said, go home. You know, it's not safe for, you know, it's getting worse. Go home. And I got into the top of the hill and I can still picture it because on my right side was the Lutheran church that I've been playing organ for the last 5 years. And on the right was the house of the woman who had been tutoring me. And I had this brief thought, maybe I should stop. But I didn't. I kept going. And the last thing I remember is the flashing lights of the stop sign, the lights.
Yeah.
And I woke up in a hospital weeks later, and I was entirely encased in plaster and had my leg up. My insides had been split open. Everything was... It was really serious injuries. And of course, I was really hopped up on pain meds, it goes without saying. And I remember the first time I woke up, opening my eyes and seeing this this woman standing at the foot of my bed who had been, she had been my Sunday school teacher. Her name was Phyllis. And she said, Heidi, you've been messing around with your life. It's time for you to get your life together and to start get right with the Lord. And at that point, she had been missionary to Korea. At that time, that's what she was doing. So what she was doing at the foot of my bed, I have no idea. I told my mother later that Mrs. Thomas had been here. She says, no, that's not possible. She's in Korea. I said, Mom, I saw her. She says, so she checked. And this was the ER, so there was supposed to be any visitors. She went and checked and showed there was no Mrs. Thomas there. And so clearly I had been seeing things. But it left a profound impact on me because she had said, you know, you need to get your life right. You do not have your life right. You need to get it right. And so I wound up, after I had recovered and was able to walk again, I went and I applied and was accepted at Bethany College of Missions in Minneapolis, which was the start of my missionary journey. I went through Bible school there. It was a 4-year program. The third year was a year in Senegal, West Africa, where I taught in an international school. I had 8 little Japanese kids I taught English to, which was fun. And so I was just, this whole experience of teaching others about Jesus and using puppets and using the music and all the different things, all the different gifts that God had given me, it was sort of reached a... I got sort of a vision for what God wanted to do with my life. Or at least I believed at that time, I said, well, I'm going to be a missionary. That's how I'm going to pay God back for sparing my life in this accident. Of course, God didn't want me to pay him back. There's no way. How can you pay God back? You know. But it was something, it was a wake-up call that I had to sort of say, okay, how am I going to use the gifts God has given me to serve him and to give my life to him? And so at that point, I did. I dedicated my life, said, God, whatever you want, however you want to lead me, whatever you want to do, that is what I will do. You just tell me what needs to happen. Please open the doors that need to be open and close the doors that need to be closed. And that has just been the prayer of my life. Even when things got really challenging and my family was strongly opposed to what I was doing at times in terms of exploring the Catholic Church, I've prayed that prayer, God, please open the doors that need to be open and close the doors that need to be closed. And he has always been faithful to do that for me. So
that's a beautiful prayer, beautiful way to put it. Yeah. Mm. And then what happened next?
Well, after that, I finished school at Bethany, and they had a publishing house that was affiliated with Bethany House, Bethany House Publishers, and I worked for there as a postgrad for 2 years, and the main guy, the publishing house, publisher, said, you know, you have some real talent here, but I think you might need to get more education, more background. And she says, there is the school, Azusa Pacific University, that gives 2 years of Bethany credits. You can finish your bachelor's degree in 2 years. So why don't you go? So I wound up going to California to get my, to complete my degree. And it was there that I first started playing for the Baptist Church in Orange, California. One of the three jobs that I was doing to put myself through school was run by this beautiful pastor John Thompson. And I played there for the 2 years that I was there. And one of my last Sundays there, he stood up and he announced that he was resigning his position so that he could become Catholic. And
wow.
I think I say this with no trace of irreverence, all hell broke loose. It was just, these people were just aghast that he would do something like this. And the chief elder stood up and announced that he was barring Pastor John from property. From that step forward, he was no longer, this is after 17 years of service. Mm-hmm. All his parents were in there, his children were there, his family had been raised there, and he was out like that. And it was just appalling. And I was appalled for him. And I called him up and I said, Pastor John, can we meet for lunch and tell me what's possessed you to do this thing? And he came and he brought this large stack of tapes and books. And he said, Heidi, I don't know if this is something that you're interested in or something that you want to know more about, but this is where I am. And he told me his story. And I thought it was very nice, and I kind of put the books and the tapes to one side because I wasn't really at that point yet, but I stuck them in the corner, and then I went to Poland. Mm-hmm. And that was where I was leading this Goodwill music tours across, from Hungary across Poland, and then into Germany. There were 27 of us on the bus. Half of them were Polish, they were Pentecostal Polish. They weren't Catholic Polish. Mm. Half of them were either Quakers or some other more conservative mainline tradition. And then we had one pastor who spoke some German. We had a German bus driver. And it was just became this crazy experience for the summer. We were traveling across and trying to set up for these concerts and things. And halfway through, we lost both our chaplain and we lost our translator, who was able to translate between the Polish and English. And so here I was with $200 in my pocket and 27 people that I had to get across on this tour. And to say I was stressed out I was just so burned out and so stressed because there was no way, again, to get in touch with the people. We had to show up in Frankfurt on this date. But in the meantime, we just had to ask God, please help us. You know, please give us what we need to be able to complete this work. And long story short, when I got back we finally did make it to Frankfurt, and the director looked at me and he said, I'm glad you made it back. However, I understand that you were not monitoring the conversations on the bus between the Pentecostals and the Quakers. And the Pentecostals were trying to convert the Quakers and to bring praise of the Holy Spirit. I said, You did not do your part of the job by giving us the accommodations that we needed, and you wanted me to monitor the conversations between adults on the bus. I said, that's not realistic, you know, very realistic, but it made me really angry and very disillusioned by this whole mission. You know, if this is mission work, is this really what I'm signing up for? Is this really what God is calling me to do? And I went back home, and I really struggled for a while. I was trying to go to church where I had been going to church, and I just felt like a hypocrite because I was so angry on the inside. And I was trying to say, you know, God, what do you have for me? Is this really what you want me to do? Or do you want me, what do you want? And again, open the doors that need to be open and close mm-hmm. the doors that need to be closed.
Were you still going through the program at Azusa at this point?
I had just graduated at Azusa at that point. After my senior year was when I took the trip to Poland.
Okay.
And so I was at a crossroads. I graduated. What am I going to do? You know, what is God asking me to do? And I went to work for a William M. Mercer Incorporated, which was a mergers and acquisitions department. And so it was just one of those jobs. It was sort of like a stopgap measure, it really was. I was still going to the church, still feeling like an outsider, still asking God, what's next? I had some things were going on at home. My father had some medical issues. Briefly, I went back home and realized that was a mistake. You can't really go home. And so it was a time of turmoil in my life. And sometimes that does happen. You know, God does, just because you want to follow God, it doesn't mean that it's going to be smooth sailing. It doesn't mean that everything is going to fall into place automatically. Sometimes there are going to be times of emptiness and times of loneliness and times of frustration. And sometimes God needs us to experience those things so that he can prepare us for that next big step, whatever that is.
And it only makes sense in retrospect.
But that's right.
When you're in it, though, it's a real cross.
That's right. That's right. And so at that time, I did have a Catholic friend who would sometimes invite me to come to Mass with him. And I did that once or twice, but I still didn't feel like that was where I belonged. So, like, we're talking about a year's worth of time here where the turmoil, the what, God, what do you want me to do? You really want me to be in missions, you know, until finally I started thinking more about making a change and started looking more, remembering Pastor Tom. You remembering Pastor John and how the experiences that he'd had, and starting looking at those books a little bit. But it was still very much I've got all these gifts. I have these musical abilities. I've got these, you know, I've been teaching Sunday school or whatever most of my life. But those gifts had gone dormant for a time. They had been gone quiet. I remembered my days at Bethany House Publisher, and I remembered very fondly. I really enjoyed that work. I'm thinking, you know, maybe there's a way I can do something like that again. But the doors kept closing and closing. Right. The retreat was, I think sometimes in our lives where we experience the turmoil and we've experienced the hard times, the temptation is very real to, like Lot's wife, turn back and look back and say, should I go back instead of should I go forward? And Lot's wife tells us the story of what happens when you do that, that God doesn't want us to live in the past. He doesn't want us to build our own future based on what we think. God wants us to stay constantly in the present and to be open to whatever it is that we have, that he has for us. Right. And so after about a year of hiding in this shadowy netherworld, God finally opened my eyes, and I found myself sneaking into this local Catholic church on my way to Lake Avenue, which was where I had been going in South Pasadena. I had been living in a room of a larger boarding house, and I would walk down the street, and I'd walk past Holy Family Catholic Church and keep walking down the street, and there was Lake Avenue, this big mega church. And so after there was, reached a certain point where I started looking at the across the road at the Holy Family and thinking, you know, I haven't felt God speak to me in such a long time during this time of this year of lostness, you know. Maybe I should try this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do I have to lose, right?
Yeah.
So
had the experience with Pastor John, did that kind of put a chink in your armor to at least be open to that?
I think it did.
Exploring it?
I think I saw somebody who was willing to give up so much. I mean, he lost his job. Mm-hmm. He lost almost all of his friends. Mm-hmm. We stayed in contact a little bit, but as I'm sure you can imagine, I wasn't the greatest correspondence back then. I'm still trying to figure out my own stuff. But he continued along that path. And so I did eventually, after I got back from Poland, one of the things that I started doing was looking into these books and discovering some of the saints and some of the There is one Scott Hahn tape series, Five Things That Are Issues for Protestants Who Are Looking at the Catholic Church. And he identified all five of them pretty well. You know, the communion of the saints, the reality of purgatory, there's, you know, all the things that you've heard people talk about time and time again. And of course, there's Mary. Mm-hmm. And actually, Mary was a topic that I didn't even really address until after I had been in the church for quite some time. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
Let's take a little break there, Heidi, and we'll be back again in just a few minutes to hear the rest of Heidi's story. I want to remind you that if you go to chnetwork.org and click on stories there, you can actually search and find a written version of Heidi's story. It's entitled Finding My Family of Faith, and you can find it, again, chnetwork.org/story. But along with her story, you'll find a whole archive of different stories and testimonies from pretty much every background imaginable. So, you know, wherever you're coming from, whatever issue, you know, Heidi, you mentioned a few of these different topics, whatever topic you're struggling with, whatever background you're coming from, you're likely to find a story there that would be really encouraging and inspiring and maybe challenging to you. So check that out at chnetwork.org. But again, we'll be back in just a couple minutes to hear the rest of Heidi's story. So stay tuned. We'll see you then. Welcome back to the Journey Home program. We're entering the second half of our hour tonight, speaking with Heidi Hess Saxton. She's a former evangelical and now the senior acquisitions editor with Sophia Institute Press. And before we get back into her story, I want to just point out this book that we'll talk about a little bit toward the end here. But she's the author of this Stories of the Eucharist, A Family Treasury of Saints and Seekers. And you were telling me before the program, Heidi, you know, the kind of a unique approach to these Eucharistic stories, mm-hmm. focusing more on, you know, the impact on an individual person's life through these different encounters with the Eucharist.
Yes. I really wanted to find stories that could talk about how lives were changed through that, whether it's St. Oswald, who when they saw the altar melt down into the ground when he was being selfish and saying, I want the biggest piece to the Eucharist. That one just cracks me up.
Yeah.
But then even something simpler, St. Tarsus, who brought the Eucharist to his parents who were in prison, and even at the age of 12, defended the Eucharist with his life. And he was killed, and they pried his hands open, and there was the Eucharist full intact and that he had managed to preserve with his life. And getting these visions for people for whom the Eucharist was so important, so indispensable, that they were willing to give everything that they had in order to be able to receive it. And that's something that I have to say, early on in my journey towards the Catholic Church, that really did make all the difference in the world to me. When I understood exactly what the Eucharist is, I just can't understand. I when I talk to former Catholics, I say, how could you walk away from that? How could you give that up? Mm-hmm. And many oftentimes, I don't, I still would go, you know, but there is a real difference in receiving Jesus every day, if you want to. Right. I mean, what a powerful thing.
It's one of those issues that it can't be an unimportant issue, right? It's either really, really, really right and important, or really wrong. I think it was Flannery O'Connor said, you know, if it's just a symbol, to heck with it, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
It's got to be one or the other. And so, you know, every Christian really needs to grapple with that. You know, could this be true? You know, even if you're coming from a non-Catholic Christian background that's very unsacramental and this is all new, whatever, but it's a question that every Christian really has to grapple with. Am I sure that my interpretation of John chapter 6 is correct?
That's right. Yeah. And it's life and death depends on it, doesn't it? You know, it's, I remember, you know, and it can change. Like, I imagine many of your listeners here who have loved ones who, even after they become Catholic, are not in the church. And I mentioned in the beginning how my mother was just, you know, so anti-Catholic in the beginning. But towards the end of her life, she was 82. She passed away last week. And she actually, after a year of living with us and watching us go forward to receive Jesus every week in the Eucharist, she, one day she stood up and she says, I'm going to join too. I'm going to receive Jesus too. And of course, the rest of my family was appalled that we allowed her to do this. But my pastor said, you go home, prepare her, read to her, tell her to make sure she knows what she's doing, and I'll give her the sacraments. And at the age of 82, she came into the full communion with the church. And wow. I cannot tell you what a miracle that was. I mean, we prayed for her. I have to say, I didn't honestly have faith in me to believe that it would happen. Mm-hmm. It was something that God worked it out because he knew yeah. it was needed to heal our relationship. And it was an amazing thing. Praise and it was God. Also another example of how I didn't I wasn't preaching her about the Eucharist every week. I was cleaning her up and feeding her meals and making sure she was where she needed to be and taking her to church with us so that our pastor could love on her. And he would see, he was from Nigeria, "Mama, come and give her hugs." Beautiful. And she felt that love. And she could see how the Eucharist was important to us. And so she wanted that for herself. And so for those of your listeners who are struggling because their families are still no closer, and as far as they can tell, mm-hmm. to coming into the church with them, don't give up hope. Yeah. You just never know what God is going to do. I do write about her story at the back of those books.
I was
going to
say, it's another one for the collection. That's
yeah,
wonderful.
I do. Yeah. And cool. It's really amazing how, you know, it doesn't take you know, just the right word at just the right time, although God does give us words at the right time. But that's one of the things I learned as a Catholic that I failed to notice as a Protestant, was that somebody else's salvation does not depend on me having exactly the right words at the right time.
Right.
It's all up to God. Mm-hmm. We can be faithful. We can be loving. We must be loving. But ultimately, we are responsible for getting ourselves to heaven, our spouses, if we have them, our children to heaven.
Yeah.
Beyond that, we can only be witnesses, you know, and we have to trust that God has the rest under his hand.
Well, it goes back to that prayer that you shared as part of your testimony, which is that when you finally really ask God for his will,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, "Lord, I don't want to set conditions on mm-hmm. your will or this story or which doors are going to be open and closed. I just want to be submissive to your
That's
will."
Right.
And then, yeah, God does use you mm-hmm. to touch other people,
mm-hmm.
but it's not until you stop trying to micromanage the plan.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So, Lord, open the doors that need to be open and close the doors that need to be closed. And you'd be surprised at how often he answers that prayer.
That's beautiful. All right. Well, we'll keep your mother in prayer.
Thank you.
Sandy. Let's pray for Sandy. So let's go back, though. When we left off before the break, you know, you had this experience of your pastor, you know, standing up and announcing his becoming Catholic, which of course shook up the church you were attending. And just, you know, when we left off, you had just begun to
sneak into
the Catholic Church. And so that's significant because, again, you shared how much anti-Catholicism had just kind of been part of your upbringing. So, yeah, what happened next?
Right. So I snuck into the church and I went to the fore and I saw this lamp at the front of the church. And I went to the front and where this tabernacle was. And I said, "God, I don't know what I'm doing here exactly, but I need your help." And I started telling him all that I had experienced in Poland and you know, everything that had happened since then and the darkness that I had been experiencing. And it was the most amazing thing because it was like somebody was listening. And I know that sounds weird because when you pray, you expect somebody to listen. But it was qualitatively different than what I had experienced. It was almost like somebody pulled open a curtain and somebody was actually actively sitting there listening to me. And so I don't know how long I was there just talking and telling him everything that had been happening to me. But I knew that he was listening. I knew that I had found a place where I was being heard. And then the organ started up, so it was time for Mass. And I thought, "Do I stay?" I decided to stay, so it's in the very back. And you know how you know, most times if there's a new person there, you know, somebody might hand a missile or something like that. But I had no idea what I was doing. And I was a little skittish about what's going to happen in this Catholic Mass. I'd never... And so the lady who, at the end of the parish, at the end of the pew, she not only hands me the missal, but she opens it up and then she points to the actual prayers so to follow along so that I would know exactly where I was going to be. This day, I often wondered if she was an angel, because that's just so out of character for Catholics to do that. But she encouraged me, and I sort of followed along. And when everybody else went forward that first week, I stayed there. But after I'd been sneaking in a couple of weeks, I didn't know any better. And so I started following up everybody else, and I started receiving Jesus with everybody else. And it was such as the most amazing thing. It was just, I knew it was different. I knew that Jesus was really there. It was just so clear to me. And I said, well, maybe I should go talk to somebody about what I'm doing here and like make it official. I had no idea what that would entail or anything, but I went and I talked to the lady who was in charge of RCIA. Her name was Dawn. And I told her, you know, what I'd been doing. And she says, well, welcome. I'm so glad you're here. Now you need to stop receiving Eucharist until you've actually entered into the full communion with the church. And so I did. You know, now that I know what the rules are, then that was what I agreed to do. And she gave me a sponsor that would travel with me. And it lasted like 3 weeks. And the lady quit because I was asking too many hard questions. And I was just crushed because I thought, you know, maybe this is a mistake. Maybe I shouldn't be doing this. And so Dawn, the lady who was in charge of RCA, she took me under her wing and she started welcoming me into her home. And I would babysit for her kids and she would have me over for brunch. It was really interesting because Dawn was a wonderful, welcoming lady. She had married a former seminarian. She believed that women should be priests. But she had these ideas that wouldn't necessarily be associated with somebody who was forming other Catholics in the making.
Right.
But she was exactly what I needed at that time. Because I even knew in my heart of hearts that only men should be priests. And I would argue with her regularly. Yeah, and we would go back and forth and around. But that's not really what I needed most of that time. I just needed somebody to accompany me. Mm-hmm. And I was talking in the car with Matt today. He was saying how the Coming Home Network is really all about accompanying people mm-hmm. who have already read a lot of the books and have already gotten a lot of their questions answered.
Yeah.
But this was a situation where she just walked with me through that process of 9 months until it was time to receive my first confession, which was really interesting. I spent the entire time telling the priest I was a bad person, and he was there to spend the entire time, no, you're a good person. We went back and forth on this until finally I said, okay, well, you're the priest. I'm going to let it go. But it was a liberating moment for me because I realized that God didn't necessarily see my life as such a shambles as I was seeing it at that time, you know, and that He really still did have a plan for me. He really still did love me. He really still was guiding me step by step through these open doors and these closed doors so that I could be in the place that he wanted me to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I entered into the church after the Easter Vigil of 1995. And I've never looked back, honestly. I can't imagine being anywhere else. God has been so good. I still had questions. Mary was a big one.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Mary.
We'll talk about that. But the fact of the matter is I felt there was a release. I no longer needed to prove to God, to pay God back for anything. I no longer needed to persuade anybody else that I was right and they were wrong. Mm-hmm. There's a real freedom in there that I could tend to my own garden mm-hmm. and not worry about so much about everybody else.
Which is interesting because sometimes the impression, again, outside the church is that Catholics are works righteousness. They're doing a lot of stuff. They're checking a lot of boxes. Mm. Is that what you experienced?
That's not what I experienced. Yeah. I have to say, I have found almost without exception that the Catholics I have encountered have been kind, hospitable, and welcoming and extremely accepting. Like after for the first blip where the sponsor quit on me, which I understand why that happened. I was kind of a pill, but when I would ask the hard questions, or I would, and even up to the point where I was still struggling the week before the mm-hmm. Easter Vigil, still wondering, God, is this really what you want from me? The priest looked at me and said, Heidi, it is perfectly okay if this is not the right time for you. Mm-hmm. Nobody is pressuring you into taking this step. Mm-hmm. If you need more time, you should absolutely take that time. Well, that's like a 180 degree difference from what I was, right, where the altar calls and, are you going to make a decision for God? There was absolute freedom and there was absolute peace that I didn't have to worry that God was still going to love me. He was still going to walk with me and I was still welcome. No matter what.
It seems like there's a connection to me between that whole experiential formation issue of identity and, really, you can accept in your head that God loves you, mm-hmm. right? But to actually wrestle with feelings of worth and dignity in your heart, like that's a whole different thing. It seems like there's a connection between that and the sacraments in the sense that sacraments, it's not something I do, right? Mm-hmm. I just show up, mm-hmm. right? And God just has this overabundant love and grace that he just gives us through the sacraments.
That's right.
To be able to finally like accept the reality of God's love, this is the connection in my mind between those two things.
Yeah, the ocean of God's mercy. That St. Faustina was one of my early friends early on where talked about how deep and wide and is God's mercy so much greater than we can imagine it for ourselves. Now, that doesn't mean that we can just continue on in sinful habits and that God doesn't expect us to follow and grow in virtue and to continue to repent of the things that are harming us, because sin is first and foremost harmful to us. Mm-hmm. It separates us from God, and God doesn't want to be separated from us. But that sacrament of confession, being able to go in, even on the worst and most painful moment of your life and say, God, I don't know what to do with this. Will you please take this from me? Will you please lift this from me? And time after time, he's done that. I remember going into confession one time in particular. I had just had this secret, family secret had just been, I'd just been told about that. I'll spare you the details, but it was horrifying and it involved my grandparents. And I heard what had happened and realized how it had affected my mother, who had in fact impacted me. And I just said to this priest, I don't know how I can forgive. How can I possibly forgive this? How? How can I even imagine that somebody like this would wind up in heaven? He says, Heidi, what if this right here is the reason God has brought you here? What if you are the only person who can pray for your grandfather? What if your intercession is going to make the difference between his eternal happiness or not? Mm-hmm. And I had to think about that, and I had to think about how often God had gone the extra mile for me.
Yeah.
And how he had worked so hard in my mother's life to bring her peace. The dementia is a horrible, horrible disease. But through that disease, I also witnessed her let go of years of trauma and years of pain and years of things that she should not have been carrying in the first place. And by the time it was over at the very end, she was a completely different person. She was at peace. And I do believe that her conversion to the church was a good part of the reason for that, that God was able to wipe clean all those things that she'd been carrying for so long. And she was able to come to a place where she could forgive and she could be at peace at last. Yeah. What a grace that is, what a grace that is.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier, again, part of that, the identity question and being able to receive God's love, right? It's like part of the paradox, not the paradox, part of the dynamic there is we tend to have the tendency as humans to, again, to fall into that trap of, well, I need to work and do X, Y, and Z so that I can be worthy of God's love. But God reverses that, right? We're loved first. While we were still sinners, he loved us, right? We approach the sacraments and he just pours out his love. And then it's in response to that, that then yes, in obedience and love, we strive to live out a holy life, or we strive to do works of mercy. We strive to forgive even when it's hard because we've already been forgiven and we didn't deserve it.
That's right.
Yeah, it puts those in their proper order.
That's true. And so, of course, even after I came into the church, I did still struggle with some things. And Mary was one of the ones, one of the issues that I struggled with most. I didn't pray rosary for the first couple of years after I was confirmed, just because I always went straight to God. Why should that change? I always went straight to Jesus. But as one of the last things that my sponsor did for me before I moved to Michigan to the new publishing job, was she gave me a miraculous medal, and she told me about the miraculous medal. And she says, Heidi, when you are lonely, when you are lost, tell Mary about it. She cares about you. She wants to know that you're okay. She wants to intercede for you. And so I put it on my console on my car and drove to Michigan, and it stayed there for quite some time. And the winter passed, and I was going through a lonely stretch. A friend that I'd been going to church with regularly had stopped going with me, and so I looked at that medallion down at the tape on the console, and I said, God, if I shouldn't be doing this, please don't let anything happen that could possibly be construed as an answer to prayer. Because, and Mary, if you can hear me, I want someone to sit with the church, amen. I put it down. I went inside, put my coat on next to me, and got down on the kneeler. And when the pastor started speaking, I looked up, and there was a strange woman standing there. I'd never seen her before in my life. She says, I just moved here. Would you mind if I sat at church? Could I sit next to you? I thought, coincidence. I put the coat over. The next week, I got out of church. I picked up that medal. I said, that wasn't funny, God. I said, Mary, if you can hear me, I'd like someone to sit within church. Again, amen. And put it down. Went inside, piled up my coat, got down on the kneeler, opened my eyes. There was two people standing there this time. I had never seen them before. I said, okay. And I slid over. And you know how everybody sits in the same pew? Okay, so normally there were four Hispanic sisters that sat right in front of me. But on the third week, there was a new family in church. And I had picked up the medallion. I said, God, if this happens, just do it one more time. And I promise I will believe that it's okay. Mary, thank you for answering my prayers the last 2 weeks. Just humor me one more week, and I think I've got the message. And I put it down and went inside. Like I said, there was somebody sitting in the Hispanic sisters' pews, so they came down and they tapped me on the shoulder and said, can we sit with you this week, dear? And so I had two on either side. And I knew this was just God's way of answering. So I put this story in the front of my book with Mary in Prayer that I published with Loyola Press many years ago. And then I wound up getting the book placed in Sacred Heart Major Seminary, where I got my master's degree. And one day I was standing in the cafeteria, and one of the female students had my book on her tray. I said, oh, would you like me to sign that for you? And she says, no. She says, you wrote this book? She says, I read that story in the beginning where you talked about how God sent someone to sit, you asked Mary to sit with you in church, has sent someone to sit with you. And I said, oh, that can't really be true. God, if this is true, I want you to send someone to sit with me at lunch today. I said, I'll sit with you at lunch today. So then she realized the story was true. But it's just so funny how God, when we give him, you know, when we sincerely want to know, we're not manipulating him because we already have our minds made up, and God never forces us. God is always a gentleman. God always acts out of love. He never uses force. And so, but if we really are genuinely confused and genuinely want to know what God's plan is, and genuinely wants to do what he wants, he will always, always open the doors that need to be opened and close the doors that need to be closed.
Yeah.
And so that was what I learned with that. And then I started praying the rosary. I worked for Ascension Press for a couple of years, and they did rosaries every day. And so the 2 years that I was there, I learned it. I got into the rosary habit, and that has made a huge difference in terms of my getting to know Mary and understanding. We adopted two children from foster care, and that was where I got another really important lesson on Mary and leaning on Mary when those moments in motherhood where I just can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard. Motherhood is hard. They don't tell you that when you first get into it. And raising foster children is hard too. Mm-hmm. But Mary came alongside me and loved me and gave me the strength that I needed when I needed
it.
That's
wonderful. So, well, let's back up just for a moment. You shared kind of your journey with Mary, but after becoming Catholic, just kind of go the these different jobs that you had and your family life, just kind of fill in the narrative there a little bit.
So I moved from California. This would have been 97. I think 97. I get lost in the years. Anyway, we moved to started working with Servant Publications. I was there until 2001. I went to Sacred Heart Major Seminary and got my master's degree in there. I married Craig in 1999, and we got the kids in 2001. Craig became Catholic just before we got married.
Oh,
he had been Episcopalian, so He's a really good man. Mm-hmm. I have to say, Craig is somebody who has a heart full of generous love, and he's taught me a lot about being generous with other people. I really admire how he was willing to take on not only me, but also open to adoption. I mean, I was 38. He was 48 when we became parents. That's hard. There's a reason God gives babies to 20-year-olds, you know. But he entered the church, and we've been married 26 years now. If you can do the math, how old I am. Yeah. And, so we were at Servant and then went from Servant to Ascension. I was there for 2 years, and then I was with Ave Maria Press for 8 years, Franciscan Media in the middle there for about 2 years. As an acquisitions editor, mm-hmm. there's every house has its own flavor, has its own kinds of books that they acquire. And so once you've been in the business for a while, there are ebbs and flows of in any house. But I feel like God has given me my final reward by taking me to Sophia. Mm-hmm. They work with all the EWTN authors, and I just... a really natural fit there. I just really thank God that he's allowing me to work with people who, for whom publishing is first and foremost a ministry. They treat their authors so well. If you're interested in hearing more, reach out to me and I'll be glad to do that. But it's just when I feel like I've gotten back to the place where work has once more become a ministry every day, where I get to help somebody tell their story, help somebody go deeper in their own spiritual life, and help people express their thankfulness for what God has done in their lives. Yeah. What a privilege. That is. Just like you. Like you get to do that every day too, right?
Well, yeah, like we said earlier, again, we're blessed with ministries where, again, we meet people on the journey at a particular turning point, a particular milestone, and we can help them, you know, kind of take the next steps forward.
Yeah.
But that's, I think, also true in a more general sense of all of us Christians, that we're called, that... that's part of what discipleship and discipling others sort of means, is recognizing, you know, I'm on a journey, they're on a journey, right? And I'm not going to try to micromanage the outcome.
That's right.
Right? I'm not going to try to, you know, control and make sure. I'm going to simply be faithful to this encounter.
Excuse me.
You know, what? How can I encourage? How can I show love? How can I just, you know, speak a word of life? Mm-hmm. And I'll trust God to bring about the fruit, and it'll be greater than I could have imagined.
That's right. You know? That's absolutely true. Yeah. Yep. And that's true, whether it's in your own kids and you watch them go off on their way and you worry that they're maybe, you know, they're taking a wrong turn here or there. But prayer is an amazing thing. And that's one of the things I've learned, that Mary loves her children, mm-hmm. and God loves even more. I mean, he loves infinitely, mm-hmm. right? But Mary loves her children, and she has all these different mantles that she wears, that the Mary, Our Lady, and doer of knots. Mm-hmm. Mary, the Star of the Sea, the Lady of the Poor. Like, there's all these different times and different circumstances in your life. There's a Mary for you. Mm-hmm. It's not that she's changed, but her mother's heart just has so many expressions. Of course, the Immaculate Heart of Mary is mm-hmm. one that's really important, because all true devotion to Mary, as de Montfort said, leads us to Jesus. Mm-hmm. So Mary would never take worship for herself. We don't worship Mary. Right. We ask her to pray for us with a mother's heart, just like Jesus said, behold your mother, behold your son, at the cross. He gave a John to Mary and Mary to John. And in that moment, she became the mother of the church.
Yeah. You know?
And so we have opportunities here to be able to have people praying for us. That's one of the best parts about being Catholic. You always have people praying for you. You have a whole heavenly host that are watching and praying and cheering from the sidelines. And you don't have to go it alone. You don't have to do this by yourself. That there is a heavenly host that is praying for you and cheering you on and urging you to be faithful to whatever calling it is that God has called you to. That when you open the doors, ask God to open the doors that need to be opened and close the doors that need to be closed. I know I've said this many times, but I've just found it to be such a powerful prayer.
Yeah.
That those saints are praying that same prayer and urging God and urging him to draw you into his heart and to draw you closer to that ocean of mercy, which is so much greater than you and I can even imagine.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the saints, all the saints, I think one of their functions in our life as Christians is that they magnify the Lord through their example. You know, and of course, Our Lady in her prophetic word, mm-hmm. right, does this in par excellence, right? That in the saints. We see their holiness. We see their, and it is real holiness. It is real goodness, real virtue that comes from God. It's all a work of grace. But when we see it in them, it helps us to recognize, well, my image of God was much smaller than the reality, mm-hmm. right? If his greatest friends look like this, well, how much greater must he be? And so they really do magnify, you know, it connects with, you know, a bit of the literary stuff, right? The importance of kind of our moral imagination, right? It's not just data and facts and figures. It's how we perceive God, you know, how we imagine him, how we, the image we have. And we need the saints to sometimes kind of break that open.
Yeah.
And make room for a bigger one.
Very oftentimes as a Protestant, I would often feel like I had to put on this front that I had to be happy all the time. I had to be perfect. I had to have all the answers. I had to be confident in knowing, you know, what God was doing and what he was doing in my life and have a grandiose testimony. And what I came to discover as a Catholic, that he loves his children at every stage and at every age. And I, as a Catholic, as I was seeking the truth in the church, I had to go back and be like a child again. I didn't know the music anymore. I had to learn a whole new canon of hymns. I didn't know initially to stop with the Our Father at the Deliver Us from Evil. I kept on going like so many other people do. You know, there's just so many things that I had to learn all over again.
Yeah.
But it was okay. That it was just part of the process. And we can have that freedom in Christ, that we don't have to be perfect all the time
and
have all the answers. But we take one step at a time. If one door opens, we take a step. And when taking that step, maybe another door will open. Or maybe he'll just have you staying there for a while, and that's okay too.
Yeah.
You know, but just be faithful to the light that you're being given, mm-hmm. and God will take you the rest of the way.
I love putting it that way. Yeah, faithful to the light that you've been given, and God will give you more. We have just a few minutes left, but you know, you sort of alluded to this in your experience with your sponsor, that I think sometimes we can sort of reduce these stories or even our own journey as merely being a matter of intellect. It's just data. It's just words. It's just theology. And that's a part of it, but like the bigger piece of it is that it's through the experience of learning and these different experiences that our hearts are changed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's ultimately the point, is that God is using these experiences to change our hearts. And so that's something I think we have to keep in mind in other people's stories as well as our own, that it's not just a mental exercise.
That's right.
Right.
Well, it's a challenge. It says, be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing mm-hmm. of your mind. Mm-hmm. That idea of transformation suggests that there's going to be some ideas that you're going to have to change.
Mm-hmm.
That in order for that renewal to take place, you're going to have to say, maybe I didn't know everything there was. Maybe that verse doesn't mean what I always thought that it meant. Maybe I need to explore and see in the context of the whole Bible,
mm-hmm.
what does this mean? And that's really scary.
Yeah.
Because if you're a pastor and you've been preaching on this verse for, you know, decades, you know, the idea that maybe there's more layers that I haven't uncovered yet can be a little intimidating.
Well, and even once I assent to a doctrine, even once I come to believe, you know, I might say it, I can speak the creed. But again, then it's a lifelong journey to really accept.
Yep.
Like again, you talked about earlier, that God really loves me. I can say that. I can read it 100 times. But in my heart of hearts, I still hold back.
Mm-hmm.
I still kind of, you know, hedge my bets a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's a journey to really open up and accept God's love and mercy.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
Well, thank you so much, Heidi, for being here to share your story. Again, the book is Stories of the Eucharist, Saints and...
A family treasury of saints and seekers.
So definitely check that out. You can probably find that at Sophia.
Yes, Sophia. It's also, it's Our Sunday Visitor.
Sorry about that. Yeah,
or you can get it on Amazon or wherever good Catholic books are sold. Yes.
Very good. And as you said earlier, if people want to reach out to you and know more about your work with Sophia, they can go to where?
hsaxton@sophiainstitute.com.
Awesome.
Yep.
All right.
Thank you
so much, Heidi.
It was great. Thank you.
And prayers for the repose of your mother. You know,
Sandy.
Thank you. Thank you for being here for this episode of the Journey Home program. I pray that Heidi's story was an inspiration to you. I know it was to me. Again, always a great reminder of just all the little ways that God uses to draw us close to him, but also that as a good father, he loves to work through us, his mm-hmm. children. That's his goal. That's his great love, is when we finally kind of let down our guard and accept his love and mercy. And that he can then work through us to share that love with other people. That's what he does through Mary, through the saints. He wants to do it through you. He wants to do it through me.
And remember, we're on a journey. So let's keep praying for each other as we continue this journey. And we'll be back again next week with another story. But in the meantime, God bless.